Attention Antioch podcast listeners. If you're enjoying our conversation about Christianity and critical race theory, we have some exciting news. Dr. Kelly Hamron, the author of Social Justice, Critical Race Theory, Marxism, and Biblical Ethics, will be joining us for the final episode of this series. We'd like to take this opportunity to allow you, our listeners, to send in your questions about Christianity and critical race theory. We'll select some of your questions to ask Dr. Hamron on this episode. You can send those questions in to us. Put CRT in the subject line of your email and send those to us at antiochpod@gmail.com. That's antiochpod@gmail.com. Thanks.
Listening to the Antioch Podcast.
Conversations about biblical anti-racism.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time.
The Antioch Podcast.
A podcast ministry of Madison Church.
Oh, I got Jesus, yeah.
Hello. Welcome to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. My name is Eric Nykamp. This past week, the nation watched as a group of protesters, some of which are self-avowed white nationalists, lay siege to the U.S. Capitol building, carrying with them Confederate flags, Trump flags, and Christian flags and crosses. It is not a stretch to say that most Americans never thought that they would see a day when something like this happened, and that symbols of racism and Christianity would be so much a part of it. But because of these events, the Antioch Podcast is releasing this episode ahead of schedule, in place of the episode we would normally release each Thursday. Our multi-ethnic team took time to reflect together and share some of our thoughts here. Let's go now and listen to this conversation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Antioch Podcast. This is a special episode because we are recording this during a week that, who saw it coming? We saw it coming. So let's be honest. We saw it coming. And what we thought we would do, we thought we would take a break from our regular schedule of recording. And we thought we would just have a conversation about how are we feeling? How are we reflecting about, some call it a protest. We don't call it a protest. We call it terrorism. We call it an armed assault. We call it a disgrace. We call it an image of white privilege on display. And so we ask that you would take a seat, get your favorite cup of coffee, and join us in this conversation, Reflections on This Past Week. I'm Michelle Lloyd Page, and joining me today are four other of our crew. Let's just start with, how do you identify yourself, and what's one word that comes to mind as you think about the events of the last 48 hours? I'll start. I'm Michelle Lloyd Page. I'm an African-American female. And one word, it's less of a word than it is a sound. And it's more the sound of rage than it is actually the word rage. I'll unpack that in a little bit, but let's hear everyone else's word. Eric, how about you?
Hi, my name's Eric Nykamp. I identify as a white man. Picking one word, gosh, that's hard.
I know.
My word would be see question mark?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Susie, you had a so we're going to call on you next.
Hi, I'm Susie Dixon, and I identify as a Puerto Rican and Italian female. My word is, and I don't even know if it's a real word, but I am unshocked, not shocked, unshocked.
Thank you. Libby, how about you?
Hi, I'm Libby Heisinga. I'm a white woman. My word is inevitable. Kind of following the same theme.
Reggie?
Reggie Smith, and I identify as African-American male, and Libby took my word. Dang it. I got to come up with another word.
You were going to say unprecedented, weren't you?
I wasn't even going to say unprecedented. I was going to say my word is wild.
Okay.
Just wild.
Let's just engage in this conversation about why we chose the words that we did and what are the feelings. And so mine is more of a sound than it is a word, right? It's that word rage, but it's seeing that happen. You know, I'm working from home. I hadn't turned on the TV all morning because I was working. I took a very late lunch break. And I thought, okay, I need to take a break from what I was doing. Let me just turn on the news to see what's happening. Turn on TV. And it wasn't even a news time, right? Because it was way past lunchtime. And I'm seeing all these people, all these white people at the Capitol raging. And I'm thinking, oh, hold up, wait a minute. Okay, what's going on? It was just like a cry in my soul. Like, how can this happen? One, how can this happen in the United States? How can people who are supposedly so concerned about democracy, they are the ones who are perpetrating it. How can people flagrantly display a Confederate flag, Proud Boy symbols, white supremacist symbols, and don't forget other Christian crosses, flags, and things like that, be in that mix? How come they can do it and I can't? Because if me with my Black self were to stand there, I heard somebody say, with a can of iced tea, I would be dead.
That's right.
If I would just even walk by the Capitol building, not go up on the steps, definitely not breaking windows. If I would have just gotten close, if it would have been my brothers, my sisters, if it would have been any Black or brown indigenous person, they would not have been able to gather in those numbers. So it is this cry, and that this cry, it's rage, but it's also a mixed with how long, oh Lord, right? So it's that I am so angry, but I'm also so questioning, how do they get to do this? How long will we get this? And the other thing that's mixed in there is like, but this isn't over. Because I so hope I am wrong, but between now and the 20th, I took off all the whole morning of the 20th because I know I can't work that day. Because I just need to see them sworn in. I just need to see them sworn in without incident. And I'm afraid that there'll either be incidents that day or leading up to it. So it's that rage, that heart cry, that's where I am.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you, because I've been thinking, okay, that happened. Now what's next?
Yeah.
What's going to happen next?
Right? Because they're not going away.
It's almost inevitable, right?
Right.
Yeah, they're not going away. There hasn't been this moment of epiphany where they said, oh my gosh, we were wrong.
I seen the light.
We're going to lay down our arms and we're now, oh, See, I was about to say it. I can't stand it when there are those who are now saying, we need to be unified. And I was like, the heck we will. you cannot own. You don't even own what you did and the damage that was done. That's like coming up to somebody, stabbing them in the back, stabbing them in the stomach, stabbing them in their hands, and then offering them a Band-Aid. So it's okay. Here's a Band-Aid.
Yeah. I really think, because of some of the conversations that I'm having, that people don't want to be unified. Like they know, I don't want to unify right now. You are on that side, I am on this side, there is no hope. And so there are people asking, okay, this is how I feel. Now what? How do we even start to bridge some gaps when we don't really want to?
For me, I was preparing for the next day teaching a class called Understanding Racism in the American Church. That was the title of my class.
Catchy.
didn't know it was going to happen, but I had this idea that maybe I could talk about what was going on in the world, maybe on day one of class. that was what was rolling through my mind, because when I snapped on the TV, I'd seen something pop up on my computer, this little indicator that like, oh, a news story is breaking right now. And I didn't even get to read it. The only thing I saw was the word storming. Mm-hmm. And I knew that they don't break in with those kind of things for weather. So I was like, something is being stormed. I wonder what that is. And I turn on the TV and the first image I see is a man marching around, I don't know if it was the House or the Senate, carrying a Christian flag.
Wow.
And then, you know, in the same room are people in fatigues and people wearing some kind of goofy costumes. I'm not going to lie, it was weird looking. And I said out loud to my daughter who is home, oh my gosh, that's the Christian flag. I was searching my news feed then on social media and noticing how many religious symbols were being pulled into this protest of, and I want to describe it this way, of all white people. It's a large white group of people, some of whom self-identify as white nationalists, who have just stormed the Capitol building, carrying their religious symbols with them. And I'm thinking, I know exactly what's going to happen in predominantly white spaces this Sunday. Jack squat, nothing. If something comes up, it will be, we need to come together. And I just want to say for the record, coming together is a vote for the status quo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming together protects people who do that. If we as white folks don't own that this is us, these are our people, we covered for this. We excused it. Mm-hmm. We took their tithes and offerings to support our ministries. And we said jack squat the whole time. And if this kind of desecration of religion doesn't just make you furious, there's something wrong with your soul. This is a problem of whiteness. And coming together to cover that stuff over, that's like the peace, peace when there is no peace. What we need to do is be rending our clothes in lament and sitting in the ash heap, saying, God, speak to us, because my heart needs to be changed and I haven't been able to notice that.
There needs to be a desperation to sit in this and to own it. Because what I saw later that night, when the senators were coming back in, and you know, there were those who prior to the storming of the building were like, I'm gonna protest this count. And then after the protest, oh, enough is enough. This is too much. I'm changing my vote. Mm-hmm. We need to come together. And I was like, you know what? You mean we have been crying out that this is too much, that enough is enough. We BIPOC people, we marginalized white people, we people who care about social justice, we who truly are seeking to love our neighbors, we have been saying enough is enough. We are hurting. We are dying in the streets. We're being shut up. We're being put away. We can't breathe. Then you haven't heard. But when you're behind, is now afraid and is laying on the floor because your own people are coming in. Oh, now you see the light? And now you want us to come together. We cannot come together until you are desperate enough to know what the problem was and how you were a part of the problem. Because what I heard is that, wow, this is not the way we are as Americans. This is not how we do democracy. We are better than this. I did not hear we did this. I did not hear that we are the problem. I did not hear that those people, I heard them referred to as protesters, not as terrorists. They came in with weapons. They came in with weapons. That's terrorism. I did not hear them referred to as terrorists. If I would have showed up with a cell phone, I make people afraid. No. Until you can sit and own this, that this is your mess. Lament, truly lament. And then look at yourselves, look at the structure and say, how do we fix this? Not how do we come together, but how do we fix this? We can't talk about unity. We can talk about it. That's fine. But are you fixing yourself? And before you start blaming all those people over there, what about you? And what about your community? And what about your church? Where does whiteness, where does white privilege, where does white supremacy show up in your neighborhood? Where does it show up in your church? Where does it show up in your heart? If you haven't had that kind of self-examination, and if you say, I don't know, help me figure it out, I'm the wrong person to ask. You better ask the Holy Spirit.
When it comes to unity, and when people say, okay, now we need to be unified, people need to look at why they weren't unified. What were the divisions? What were those gaps? What were those disconnections? And they need to enter into that messiness. And like you said, you know, if there is an ownership that needs to happen and say, okay, I contributed to this part of the messiness, you need to step in there and look at that. And sometimes you don't even recognize it as messiness, but somebody has been saying it over and over again. Look at this is messy. Listen, you know, so there's so much that comes before actually coming together, you know, and say, okay, we are unified now. Wanting to be unified is good, but pressuring people to be unified, I think that's gaslighting, right?
Yeah,
I think that's a way exactly. of trying to manipulate and yes. force people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Susie, you hit it right on the head. I think that is gaslighting.
There was this weird part of me, and I've been trying to find the right word for it. The closest I've come is validated, but even that feels a little too positive. Of the experience in 2016 of being really upset and people being like, just give Trump a chance. Like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, It's just his words. Look at his actions. His words don't matter. Mm-hmm. Do his actions. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, but I'm upset about his words. And then
preach.
The whole like, what's the worst that could happen? This is what all the words have led to. And the validation comes from the gaslighting of being told like, you're making a big deal out of nothing.
Right.
And being like, no, this is what was coming the whole time.
When white religious leaders tell people now is a time to come together, when people are getting upset, I wonder if they're as interested in unity as they are with quelling discomfort.
Yes.
Because whiteness is all about maintaining a sense of comfort. Our privilege puts us in a place where we have very few coping skills for dealing with discomfort. So when we experience discomfort, we experience it as if it is a threat. Yeah. And that it needs to be put down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But really, this is an opportunity for us as white folks to lean in and to say, you know what's going to help that sin condition that I have is to listen to people who aren't me, who are fellow image bearers of God, and to close my mouth and to listen and to sit in it and to develop muscle tone around listening.
And all of that involves positioning yourself with humility, right? This just stating, yes, I have pride, and there are reasons why I probably didn't listen to that narrative before, and so I'm going to put all that aside and Lord, position me so that I can hear what I haven't been able to hear before. Help me to see what I haven't been able to see before.
I want to go back to my word, and that word is wow. Because if we remember, the day started off by the two Georgia senators who were confirmed as winning their runoffs, and having a black man, Reverend Raphael Warnock, to win the Senate in a state in which 55 years ago, he could not vote. That's not very long ago. He couldn't vote. That's astonishing. And then to have all those black people who came and support that, who went against the grain, despite all of the obstacles and lies that were going on, those black people validated, as Libby said, they validated the power of the vote, in which something that was denied to them only 55 years ago. That wasn't that long ago. And then to have this other, just this split screen of white folk running towards the Capitol and believing the lie that they were suffering. I don't think that picture was any different from 1865.
I think it's worth mentioning that John Ossoff was also elected, who's Jewish, on the same day we saw people storming the Capitol wearing sweatshirts that said this awful Camp Auschwitz.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so there's another layer beneath what you're saying. Sorry.
Yeah, so I'm seeing in that picture, it's about white power. They've lost. And they need a narrative and a story that helps. And that's exactly what Trump fed them. He fed them a story, a narrative, that they had lost something. And the only way to get it back is to take it by force. Mm-hmm. And there's the picture. There's the picture. Mm-hmm. We're going to take what we think is ours by force, and how white evangelicals said that was okay.
Yes.
That was okay with the gospel.
And it was a story that did not include diversity.
Nope.
It was not an inclusive, we're taking our country back in an inclusive way. And it's like, okay, you lost something. What did you lose? The only thing you've lost is exclusive power. That's the only thing you have lost is exclusive power.
Some of the folks who were storming the Capitol are self-proclaimed white nationalists,
yeah,
who are storming after they lost an election that promised them that they were going to make America great again.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm getting the tone wrong because I'm feeling passionate. And I know as soon as I get hot tempered, there's white people in my life that will say I'm too angry. And they're gonna, and something can happen if I get too angry. But
welcome to being black. Welcome to being Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican.
So I'm trying to get myself calmed down enough so that I can be like the version of myself that people want to listen to, but I'm the same person. And for us to recognize that. And this is not an exclusively Republican criticism, but we are talking about at the moment a Republican administration, is that we as white people have not wanted to address this in our friendships, in our churches, in our family relationships, because we don't want to lose something.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to lose relationships.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have people leave our churches.
We also don't want to lose the quality of our relationships, not even just losing them outright, but making them slightly harder.
We don't want to lose tithes.
Mm.
And white churches operate on white tithes.
Mm-hmm.
And when we make our bed with that, at some point we have to explain why that's okay. When we cloak it in all kinds of language that sounds so biblical.
Oh, yeah.
But at the root of it, we're not worried about the people who don't give a lot when they leave. And we don't worry about the people that make us uncomfortable. We aren't worrying about, you know, the LGBT folks that are in our congregation. If they leave, that sort of makes the job a little easier. If we're in a predominantly white space and we have a few people of color, if they can't serve in a way that we can take a photo and use it in promotional materials, we're not usually too upset if they go.
No, you didn't.
This is our whiteness issue. Like we need to not come together unless we're coming together at the foot of the cross and saying, God, mend my heart.
What you said, but you're setting up, Eric, these contrasting images of the cross, which is about disempowerment. Be who be in the very nature of God, did that consider equality God something to grasp, to grab, to steal, to insurrect, but made himself nothing. Even to death on a cross, he became a servant.
Mm-hmm.
The very symbol in which white Christians wear around their neck, put on flags, storming the Capitol, is a direct rejection of disempowerment. Jesus bought us by disempowering himself. And they flipped on the head and said, this is about grabbing power. This is about grabbing power. And we do that at in the same way of saying that we devalue those who ain't like us. We were saying yesterday that those who have value are white and Christian and straight and male. And we are saying, and they are saying, that is okay. And which is the opposite of what that symbol means. White people need to understand, you don't know the gospel anymore. You gave up the gospel. Mm. You gave up the gospel for power.
Yeah.
And you are getting exactly what you want, which is nothing. You get nothing because you really don't take the gospel seriously. You want to flip it in order that you may get power and prestige from it. So what would Jesus say to you? What would he say to you on as he is on the cross being disempowered? What would he say to you about who do you say I am? That's the grading question. That's the essential question. Yesterday, who do you say I am? Grapple with that. Sit with that. Because it's not matching up.
I heard this quote this morning when I was doing my devotions. It's from Jim Elliot. So this is the anniversary today of his, I don't know if it's his death. I'm assuming it is. It said Jim Elliot, the missionary who was killed by people he was reaching out to, he famously said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." That struck me because I know I sound like sometimes I'm like pointing a finger when I get mad, but I'm asking the same question of myself. When Ferguson happened, I had a conversation with one of my friends. Like, I was okay with the idea of Black Lives Matter, but I was really uncomfortable with having that go on promotional material when we were having a call to prayer service, because I was still centering white people's feelings. And I knew in my gut, even though I hadn't articulated it, that some white people won't show up to an event that says that. And my friend said point blank to me, like, "I don't want to go to a church that can't say that." And it made, and I'm sure I blustered for another 20, 30 minutes on the phone. I'm sure I did. It might have been longer. I might have said dumb stuff. But I've been that guy really recently where I was more worried about what white people thought than the people who are actually being hurt. I am that guy. I've got a lot to answer for. And I know I'm not the only one. I know I'm not.
Well, how many people have been saying, "This isn't the America I know"? That only comes if you have a white-centered view of America.
Yes.
And once you start listening, that view of America, if you're a white person, that's what you grew up with. Once you start listening to stories from people of color, that view of America will fall apart. And it will take the scales off your eyes and it might hurt. And then instead you're going to end up saying, "No, this is exactly what America has always been. This is the consequences of our actions."
That is so profound, Libby.
I want to comment on, Eric, what you were talking about church, pastors, and I'm just going to say it. If you are a white pastor who has not addressed all of everything that's been going on, and there are people of color in your congregation, you are not safe. You are not a safe person, because a pastor the hope of a pastor is to shepherd that person to be the person that God created them to be. And by not addressing the realities of what's happening in that person's world, you're putting on an expectation of this is who I need you to be in my congregation. Mm-hmm. There's this expectation of, okay, this is what my congregation is going to look like, and this is what you need to look like here. And I would love for you to just sit with that. What kind of expectations have you had so that your congregation can function in ways that are comfortable to you? Like you were talking about, you know, comfort.
Right. Assimilation. Assimilation simply means that you must be like us. You must agree with us. You must accept what is us. You must be who we are. Anything less than that, and accept an inferior position. You must accept an inferior position that you will never, ever be like us. And that's why it's so difficult to have this unity conversation, because what you're also saying to us is you don't have any power. We do. And we decide who gets it. We decide how we delegate it. We decide how much we will give away. And when it really comes down to it, we're really not interested in giving away any of it.
And we're also being told, and don't say anything that will make us uncomfortable.
Right.
Don't tell us, and don't look like you're not flourishing. So when you're here, smile, laugh, let us joke with you. Let us say off-color things or do microaggressions, but don't get upset about that.
Right.
Because we don't want to be uncomfortable. Don't tell us what's hard, because that's going to disrupt the thing. So we want unity, which means you can't have a problem.
Right.
And we can't have a problem. And we won't have a problem as long as you don't share your problems. That's what right. unity is.
That's right.
It's like, as long as you don't share your problems, not that you all don't have problems, but just don't share them. Don't tell us about them.
Right.
Because it's going to make us uncomfortable, and we might have to do something. We might have to change. And we don't want to do that, because that will make us uncomfortable. So just sit there or sing. Sing for us. Sing for us.
Yeah, add some color to our worship.
Yeah.
Be a little seasoning on top, but don't ever try to be more than that.
Yeah. And it's okay if you raise your hand, but, you know, only raise your hand for a second, you know, because worship got to end at 11:45. And if you, there's no getting caught up in the spirit. So no.
Yeah. Did Jim Crow actually leave after the 60s? No, it didn't.
It just
shift. Race and place goes everywhere. And the struggle is for our white brothers and sisters to actually struggle with, what does it mean to suffer for the gospel? What does it mean to suffer for others? What does it mean to lay down your life for your friend, if you really have a friend in which you would lay down your life for? Does the gospel go beyond genetics, or does it not? And that continues to be the question, because the whole book of Acts is about the gospel going beyond genetics, that the gospel goes beyond Jerusalem, which was, hey, it was a subculture people who all were the same. And the Holy Spirit just turned that bad fella upside down and brought into question the Jerusalem model of evangelism, and said, the Holy Spirit is not with that anymore. and Paul and Peter and all of them had to get in each other's face to say, you can't go back to Egypt. You see, yesterday was about going back to Egypt. And they can't go back to Egypt, so you might as well try to take yourself back to Egypt.
Yeah.
White America, you can't go back to Egypt.
The whole world was watching. I mean, the whole world was watching. So if we were just to look at the people in our country watching it, there were a number of different perspectives. You know, like some were cheering them on.
Mm-hmm.
Others were sitting in fear, right? And okay, what is this? What's going to happen? If we were just to look at that and admit, okay, that is the mess that is actually in our churches, in the pews. You have people with different perspectives. Which one are you going to cater to and why? You have the job of the media, pretty much. Who am I going to cater to and what is newsworthy? What am I going to say? Versus, Lord, help me see what I need to see and help me speak what needs to be said.
I think about how Jesus set the example of laying down his life to save people. For us as white folks, no one's asking us to lay down our life. We do have the request, which we culturally have been unwilling to do, is to lay down some of our comfort, to lay down our desire to rebut, to shout down. For me, if I'm going to gender it, for me as a guy, I know as a white man how to make myself larger in the room, how to raise my voice, how to start getting angry in groups if somebody is saying something that I don't like, that's a bullying and an intimidation tactic. I know how to do that, but culturally we know how to do that. We know how to insist that our narrative is the dominant one. We are being asked to lay that down. And honestly, it just keeps us sick anyway.
It's laying that down and it's picking up. Picking up the hands of the people who don't look like you. Grabbing those hands. Grabbing those hands because one, that brings you closer together physically, that's proximity. Picking up their hands, there was an activity I did once and the exercise was you had to take someone's hand and look in their eyes. Look in that person's eyes. And I think it was for 5 minutes. You know how long 5 minutes is to hold someone's hand?
5 seconds is long.
I know. And you couldn't say you couldn't say anything. You weren't talking so that you could really see them. So I say the other part, yeah, you lay stuff down, but then what are you going to pick back up? You're going to pick up the hands of your brothers and sisters, the hands of people who you know, the hands of people you don't know, and you're going to look them in the eyes so that you can see them and know them, not just know of them, not just the stereotypes, but really know them. That's how we get to unity.
Another thing I think we have to lay down is moral equivalency. Comparing the Black Lives Matter protests and the insurrection at the Capitol this week it has some value, and we're probably going to be doing it for the next 30 years, is comparing and contrasting those two. Mm-hmm. But comparing and contrasting, or saying that Black folks who damage property because they are outraged about the loss of life of their brothers and sisters is the same thing as what happened this week is not a fair comparison.
Yeah.
The gospel is hard.
It is.
The gospel is hard because it goes against all of our self-interests. It goes against everything in which we want is easy, convenient. And redemption is going to, that's a big word, redemption. Redemption is going to, has to come from the people who don't have any, the people who don't have power. And it's no secret that it's Black folk, and John, I'm copying John Lewis, it's Black folk who need to help America redeem its soul. It was Black people who helped to redeem the soul of this nation because it didn't live up to its true ideals. It didn't live up to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. It presented a picture of hypocrisy, and so did the American white church did not live up to its own gospel ideas.
Mm-hmm, right.
It accepted the false one. It accepted false idols. Mm-hmm. It rejected its own redemption, and it took Black people to help to redeem itself. Quit looking in the wrong places, expecting to find redemption.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast. Worship well together.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
God bless.
Thank you so much.
Antioch Podcast listeners, we'd love to stay in touch. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, as well as on the web at www.antiochpodcast.org. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please rate and review us. Positive reviews help others find us when looking for quality podcasts. And now, for our regular post-podcast disclaimer.
You have been listening to the Antioch Podcast. The opinions expressed on the Antioch Podcast are not the official views of Madison Church, its leadership, or the denomination of the Christian Reformed Church. Madison Church is a member of the Christian Reformed Church and adheres to its doctrinal standards. The purpose of this podcast is to provide recorded examples of the kinds of conversations which we believe churches need to have in an increasingly diverse world. These kinds of conversations pave the way for a multi-ethnic congregation to design worship services with unity and justice, and truly worship God diversely together. Thanks for listening. Bye!